Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti, founder of Conti Law in Moon Township. And at Conti Law, we consider ourselves your legal concierge, and I know that in the past I've explained what that means. But our job is to be there for you, quite frankly, whatever you need, questions, concerns, recommendations. If you have questions, I'll start by giving you our contact information and our website for you to check out. I'll repeat it a few times throughout the show, but I really advise that you go online, you check out what we have, and then contact us if you would like a complimentary consultation. Our telephone number is 724-784-0239. I'll repeat that again, 724-784-0239, and our website is contilawpgh.com. contilawpgh.com. So I was recently at an event, and I had a lady pull me aside and ask me a question. And she said, listen, I listen to you every weekend. You've never talked about, or in detail, have never talked about prepaying your funeral. And I really thought about it because I've been doing the show for quite a while over the years. And I think she's right. I don't believe that I've talked about in too much detail pre-need funeral contracts. So what does that mean? And there's different names, pre-need, prepay, IBA account, all of these things. But funeral homes often will offer pre-need funeral arrangements. What that means is you prepay your funeral. So you pay in advance for any of the funeral arrangements that you choose. Now, it's nice, and people like it because it gives you a sense of security. It provides you the opportunity to decide what you want and to leave as little as possible of a burden on your family to make those decisions. I hear that all the time. Mom died, I'm going to the funeral home. I don't know, what do I pick out? It's the last thing on their mind. What casket do you want? The flower arrangement. Do you want certain music played? I have a client, he's one of only probably two in my whole career. He told me in his estate plan what his funeral arrangements were to be. From the music, the color of the casket lining, the poem read at the church, the pictures that he wanted showed. He went all out. I've never had anybody else do this, but he knew what he wanted. And so the funeral home had a copy and I had a copy, as well as the executor of his estate. Now keep in mind, the second top question I get once somebody dies is, how do I pay for their funeral? Because let's be honest, the average funeral here in Western Pennsylvania, it's expensive. You're looking at over $5,000, probably $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. I've seen it as high as $15,000. Keep in mind, there may be additional costs as well. And they say, and I don't know if this is true, so don't call or email me and tell me I'm wrong, because I don't know, but I've heard it said that the average cost of a funeral doubles every 15 years. Again, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if there's proof to that. But if that is the case, it's expensive. It's expensive to die. I need to write a book called It's Expensive to Die. Now, pre-need contracts vary, of course, depending on what funeral home you go to. But generally, they're the same, meaning that you can pick out what you want. So what casket do you want? What type of service do you want? How many days do you want laid out? How many hours do you want laid out? Do you want flowers? Do you want a keepsake? How do you want to pay for it? Lump sum, monthly? Do you want to assign a life insurance policy to it? Now, my understanding, and again, I know enough about this, but this is not my expertise in pre-planning. I'm not a funeral director. But my understanding is when you die, so long as your package has been paid in full, Your family doesn't have to make any funeral arrangements. They don't have to pay for them. Now, I know that as time goes on and the costs grow, there may be additional costs your family have to come up with. Maybe it's a couple $100, a couple $1,000. But keep in mind, you have to ask the questions. With any contract, I tell my clients, don't sign anything without reading it and fully understanding it. I'm not saying that your funeral home is fraudulently going to rip you off. One of my dearest friends, college roommate, her and her husband live out in Blairsville, and they own, well, between the two of their families, many funeral homes throughout Western Pennsylvania. And so when I have a funeral question need, I call her because she's a funeral director. She's my go-to. But I have had clients locally who've gotten very upset and they have complaints. Now, none of them have ever cited fraud or anything like that, so I don't want to insinuate that. But they've said, look, mom prepaid $8,000 10 years ago and now the cost is $10,000. Shouldn't they honor the difference? Why do I have to pay the difference? Well, did you ask the questions? And there are certain questions that I tell everybody to ask. You have to understand the terms of the contract. Don't sign it without reading it. If you need, bring it to your attorney to review and explain to you what it means. Can you cancel that contract? If you do cancel it, how much will you be repaid? Will you be refunded all of it, some of it, none of it? Can you transfer that contract to another funeral home? Speaking of transferring, what if you move out of state? Can you transfer it to another state? What happens if what you picked isn't available when you die? Does your family have to pay more? More than what you've already paid? What happens to the money you prepaid for your funeral? Is it kept in trust? Is it kept in an escrow account? Does it go into the funeral director's pocket? What happens if you die in a different state or country? What happens if the funeral home goes bankrupt and they're no longer around at the time of your death? What if your wishes change? So I've seen this happen where people have pre-need contracts and then the older they get, they move out of state. Now, do you want your funeral in your new state? In the state you originally planned for it in? Well, depending on the terms of that contract, you may be unable to receive a refund. You may be charged a penalty. Maybe there's a 30% cancellation charge. Maybe the funeral director will say, okay, and transfer it to your new funeral home. So these are things you have to think about and ask in advance. Now, again, I've never had a client who has claimed or filed suit for fraud, but the government does have laws in place through the Federal Trade Commission. There are laws and rules in place requiring funeral homes to protect their consumers, their clients, in certain ways, but not in every way. So I tell people, if you are concerned that the funeral home won't be here when you die, go to your bank. Create what's called an irrevocable burial account, an IBA. It's where you can set money aside that can be used upon your death for your funeral needs. You can also create what's called a Totten Trust. A Totten Trust is an account that's payable to a beneficiary upon your death. The trust, of course, does not go through probate. So when you do die, the beneficiary has immediate access to it and can pay for your funeral arrangements, your funeral needs, the costs, the wake, the flowers. I had a lady recently when I said, I need you to give me all of the costs associated with your mom's passing. Of course, we have the funeral, or if there's a cremation, the viewing, the wake, the flowers, Did you buy a new outfit? Not for you, for the decedent. Those sorts of things. And she said, well, I went to one of the local chain stores and bought picture frames. And then I went online and I ordered pictures. I downloaded pictures to have them developed. And then I went online and I had brochures printed out. Are all of those deductible? And the answer is yes. And that's what those funeral monies are there to pay for. Now, I know I'm jumping into the tax because that's what I was talking with her about, the inheritance tax. And they are deductions. But for this purpose, about pre-need funeral, that money can, that is set aside, can be used to pay for those sorts of things. Now, you can save for your funeral on your own. You can put it in the trust. You can put it in the bank. You can put it with the funeral home. But I always tell people, no matter what you choose to do, you should always include your wishes for your funeral arrangements in your will, with the funeral home, with your estate planning attorney, with the estate planning documents, with your executor, with your trustee, with somebody. Somebody should know what you want. This is where our role as the attorney comes into play, to explain to you the differences is how you can prepay your funeral home. You can set it aside, especially if you're not comfortable signing a pre-need contract. But if you do, or if you consider doing that, bring it over. We'll review it for you. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Conti's Law with your host, Attorney Michelle Conti. We're here for you every weekend to discuss different circumstances and situations that we see on a daily basis with our clients. You can give us a call for your complimentary consultation, 724-784-0239, or check out our website, www.contilawpgh.com. Well, I hope that answers your questions regarding pre-need, prepaid funeral. That's really, I hate to say all I have to say about it, but you have options that need to be explored and questions that need to be asked. At the same event, I was asked a question, and to me, it's quite basic, but really, should I have a will? That was the question, period. Do I need to have a will? And my answer always is, it depends. As we all know, or should know, a will is just a legal document that says who's going to be in charge of settling your estate when you die and who gets your assets upon your death. That's it. Now, is your will typically the centerpiece of any estate plan? Yes, it is. Same holds true if you have a trust. Same thing. But keep in mind that your will goes through probate, but not all assets go through probate. Only assets that are titled in the decedent's name, individual name, go through the probate process upon our death. Not a joint bank account. Not an asset or an investment that have a beneficiary designation on it. Not life insurance. Not an annuity. Not an IRA. Not a 401k. Not a residence that has a joint owner. All of the time. I always tell people, depending on your circumstances, you should always have a will. Everybody needs a will. Because we all have an estate. It doesn't matter our wealth. The level of wealth, just add some more zeros on there. But we all have stuff. So not only is the will important to convey property as you want it to be conveyed upon your death, but for other things too. I always go back to, if I die, or my husband and I die in a common accident, we have minor children. Who's going to be the guardian? Who's going to watch over them? Who's going to manage their affairs? What about tax planning techniques? I'm a tax attorney. These are things we talk about. But ultimately, it comes down to who's getting your stuff when you die. Because if you don't decide and you die without a will, Pennsylvania intestacy law will decide for you. You also cannot disinherit a spouse in Pennsylvania. The spouse is entitled to their elective share, which is typically about a third. What about if you have a specific bequest? Maybe it's not a valuable item, but it has sentimental value. And you really want that to go to someone special. I'll tell you this. My brother and I... Now, I say this because there's just the two of us. And because this is what I do for a living, I think my family's, you know, they're a little different because we talk about this stuff more so than most families. And my brother and I tease my parents who are healthy and alive. And I don't want to insinuate otherwise, but we don't fight over their money. We don't. I don't care who it goes to. It can go to the grandkids for all I care. However, we fight over their stuff. And I tell this story all the time and people think I'm nuts. When we were growing up, and my brother's 5 years older than me. When we were growing up, my parents, we lived a very normal life. My parents, my mother went shopping and bought these two porcelain. They're probably about a foot tall each. They're green. They're, and I don't know what they're called. We call them foo dogs. But they're of Asian descent. And they're really cool looking. And I'm sure she didn't pay very much for them, but they've been a staple in their lives literally since I can remember. So they probably had these things for 30 years. And when we were kids, my brother would always tease me and say, when mom and dad die, I get the foo dogs. I have no idea why he said this or why we even talked about this as kids, but we did. And so he always said he got the foo dogs. And I said, okay, I don't want them. I was getting mom's jewelry. It didn't matter. Well, the older we've gotten, my brother has his own life and he's very successful and they don't live here. He and his wife live in Germany. And so my parents went to visit him. And one of my dad's dreams has always been to go to the Black Forest. My dad loves cuckoo clocks. And so when they went to visit Scott, they stopped over at the Black Forest and my dad was like a little kid, he said. My brother said it was like Christmas. And he got to talk to the carver. I don't even know what the guy's correct name is. But the person who was going to whittle the cuckoo clock for my dad. So my dad special ordered it and had it. And I remember it was the longest 12 weeks of his life waiting for this thing to be delivered back to the States. And it came. And my mom was so excited, she took a picture and sent it to me. And so... it's beautiful. My response to my brother was, you get the foo dogs, I get the cuckoo clock. And of course, we were teasing. And my parents just roll their eyes and ignore us because they say, look, we're still here. We're still healthy. Why are you guys fighting over this stuff? It's still ours. But it doesn't come down to the money. It's about the stuff. And so my brother, even though he's 6 hours ahead of us, sure called me immediately and said, no, you don't. I want the cuckoo clock now. And so we battle about this. And of course, we're teasing. But sometimes people do take this to heart. So if you have items of sentimental value that you want to go to a certain person, jot them down. Put it in your will. Same holds true if you have minors. I talk about the guardians. But I have little kids, and if God forbid we die, I need to know that what I leave my children won't be in vain, won't be wasted, won't be blown on silly things. I'm a proponent of no kids should get any money at 18, and maybe I'm a little bit crazy. I have people who give me the look when I talk about this, and they say, what do most people do, or what would you do? And I'll tell you what I did. My kids are very little, so I don't know what they're going to be like when they grow up. I don't know what their habits will be like. Maybe they'll be spendthrifts. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll have good habits. Maybe they won't. So it doesn't matter. I'm 40, and if my parents left me money at this point, now again, I hope they live forever and I don't want their money, but if they did, I think I'm mature enough where I can handle it. But I would say at 18, and I'm just talking about me, your family may be different. At 18, there's no way I should ever receive money. Even at 25, maybe 30, no way. And I say that because everybody has their own maturity level. But the way I drafted my remainder trust for my kids, I listed a guardian. I listed a trustee of their trust to manage and to see to the to their education, and then to make sure my wishes are seen to. So if a third goes to them at 30, a third at 35, and a third at 40, to me, that's fair. I have other people who say, you're crazy. I'm giving it to all of them at 25. They should be mature enough. I have other people who think that I'm too aggressive and say, no way. A third at 30, a third at 40, a third at 50. Well, you can do whatever you want. That's the beauty of your estate plan, is you can make any distinction and any change before you pass away that you see fit. I think it's great because, and I, in my example, I, you know, named my brother as the trustee of my kid's trust. He's good with money. And so he would have the authority to say, okay, we'll use this money to pay for your education. If you have any medical issues, we'll pay for this. We'll make sure you're not living under a bridge or homeless, and you have a reasonable vehicle, a reasonable apartment, a reasonable house. And I have people who carve out exceptions and say, okay, we'll pay for the kid's wedding, or we'll pay for a car up to X value. We'll pay for them to start a business. Not everybody does that. It's really whatever you want to be in your document, and we can put it in there. But you're leaving the decision-making to the trustee, so obviously you have to trust these people or this person. The other thing you want to do, same holds true, is name an executor that you trust. And keep in mind, the executor is going to manage and settle the estate, your estate. And it's all in accordance with the terms of your will. Now, you want to make sure the executor is willing and able to do it. Now, if the executor you've chosen doesn't want to do it, that's okay. They can renounce their right. But what if you name two executors? You can name two of them who can work together. You could have an individual. You can have family members. You can have a close friend. You can have a corporate executor or corporate trustee, a bank. You can have an attorney. Whomever you feel comfortable with, that's the goal. Now, again, I say this quite a bit, is I can't see into the future. I don't know what's going to happen. We can't provide for every single possibility because I don't know what your future holds. But I tell people all the time, it's imperative. Let's update your documents when any life events occur. If something significant changes or happens in your life or in the lives of those who you've included in your will, your executor, your beneficiaries, your spouse. And again, and I say this often, and I'll repeat it again. If something changes in a beneficiary, if they die, if you have a new kid, if there's been an adoption, a marriage, a death, a drug problem, these are things that would change the terms of our document that we should consider making that follow-up call to say, now what? What if you move? I have a lot of clients who are snowbirds. They go down south and they come back up here. You can do that. What if you just move altogether, move to another state? Well, if you move, you want to make sure that the will you have or the powers of attorney you have are good in that state. Most laws are pretty similar, but there could be significant differences. So you want to make sure that the court would interpret them the same. Changes in your finances. You make more money, you lose money. You might want to change the terms of your will or who you're giving your stuff to. What if your marital status changes? You get married. You get divorced. You become a widow. Then more than likely, you need to revise your will. Especially when you're having a second or a third marriage with a blended family. I tell this story all the time, but your spouse and your children from a different relationship may not get along. The kids, I hear this all the time. You can't disinherit the spouse. But do you want to leave your kids out as well? So these are things that you really need to consider and think about. And that's our job. That's our job, is to sit down with you and make sure what you haven't thought about, we've talked about, we bring up and make you aware of what could happen. That's the end of our show today, folks. Thank you for tuning in, as always, to Conti's Law. If you have any questions or concerns for us, feel free to reach out. 724-784-0239. As always, it's been a pleasure. Have a great weekend, everyone. Until next weekend, God bless.